The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, pre-Thanksgiving edition, episode 580 for Sunday, November 22nd, 2015.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We share it all. We answer your questions. We share advice. The goal is for everyone to learn at least three new things each. And every time we get together, sponsors for this episode include Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG, where you can build a gorgeous website no matter what your skill level. Casper at casper.com/MGG, where you can then use coupon code MGG to save yourself $50 off of some of the best mattresses I've ever experienced. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. And Drobo, where at drobostore.com, you can get a coupon code, which I will tell you about later, so that you listen and learn exactly what it's for and save $100 getting you a Drobo for less than $200 if you so desire. We'll talk all about that shortly here. And here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fruitful, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun.
And here in another part of Durham, New Hampshire, is Pilot Pete. Thanks for having me back, guys. I almost forgot how to get here.
It's good to have you back, my friend. Yeah, it's been too long.
Way too long.
Yeah.
Busy.
Yeah, we're all excited to have you, man.
Thank you.
It's always good. Always.
So, Dave, I think this is kind of relevant.
And not that that's ever been a factor in the past, but let's go.
Well, I thought I'd bring this up because you actually questioned me about this. So I actually got a pre-Thanksgiving gift, Dave.
And that was?
And it was from Verizon. I got an email from them and they said, hey, because of the plan that you're on, my understanding is now all the plans are like, you know what? We're going to give you an extra gig of data this month. The reason it's relevant is because how did I know this? So, you know, I signed up, you know, they sent me an email. I went to my account and clicked on the button. And then all of a sudden I had more data. How did I know I had more data? Is that the widget that I have, and that's the relevant part that I think, is that the widget that I have in my notification center showed me that I had not one, but now 2 gigs of data this month. Normally I have one. And then that led to a question that I think you asked on the Facebooks, saying, you have a widget that tells you about your data? And at least Verizon, now the thing is, as far as I can tell, not all
AT&T does not have a widget, or at least not with the My AT&T app, which is the one that I have installed. I've never heard of AT&T having a widget.
No, there's no widget, but there is a data thing in there to tell you who's used which amount of data. And the cool thing is you can turn them off.
You can turn them off. That's right. On a family plan. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So that's awesome, John, that you can see your data usage right there. You don't even have to launch the app.
And so if you go in a notification center, the way you should be able to access it and see what other widgets you have installed is go to notification center. And then there's an edit button on the bottom. And then I saw a widget called My Verizon Data. And if you choose to display that, it'll show you in real time how much data you've consumed for that period. Though I got to admit that I found that, and this is also while you and I were traveling, is that there is another one that I use here, and it's a bit more predictive called Dataman. And I would also recommend that for people. That will also monitor your data usage. It actually was interesting because when you and I had traveled recently, because my data usage increased, relatively speaking, at a higher rate, it started warning me. It was like, whoa, man, you're consuming a lot of data here. If you keep this up, you're going to blow past your data cap. And it shows you how much you do on Wi-Fi, too. So two tools there you may want to use, especially if you're on the road and you're consuming lots of data to make sure you don't go crazy.
That's the
your wallet.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. That Dataman, and they have a widget, too. Right. And they've also got a watch app. So it's you can see it from wherever you want to see it. Handy stuff. Hey, while we're on the subject, let's do a couple of cool stuff found items this week. We've been alternating back and forth, as you folks know. And this week, we're going to go to the listeners. That's you. And share some things that you folks found. One, very timely. This ends, I believe, on Friday, which here in the U.S. is Black Friday. It may be Black Friday elsewhere in the country, too, or in the world, I should say. Listener Mark reports that he saw a deal, and we've got a link for you, where Drive Genius, among many other apps, is sold in a bundle for $39. I think it's 8 apps. It might even be up to 10 now. It's through Stack Social, and we've got a link for you to use from our Mac Observer Deals site. But if you've ever wanted Drive Genius before, $39, man, and you're good to go. And there's some other fantastic apps in this bundle as well. So we'll put that link in the show notes because you should take advantage of this. This is a good deal. So thank you, Mark, for sharing that. Good stuff. Next on the cool stuff found list from Greg, the cool thing is, of course, with the Apple TV now, there are apps out there for it. And discovery of these apps is not an easy thing. So thank you to everyone who suggests some of them. And we'll talk about one of them shortly here. But Greg shares, and I need to find it in his email. Oh, yeah. He says, by the way, I'm really liking the new Apple TV. I'm even using it to take exercise classes. I downloaded an app called Zova, Z-O-V-A, and I've been doing that every day for at least 20 to 30 minutes. It looks like my Roku is retired, although it served me well. I'm curious how you feel about that in about 6 months, Greg. The Apple TV is new and shiny and all of that. And it may well hold up. I don't say that with any prediction. I just say it with curiosity.
I've got an ignorance question. Does the Apple TV support Plex?
Yes. We'll talk about that. In fact, we have a couple of questions about that coming up.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But we've talked about that on a couple of recent episodes. Yeah. I know you've been traveling.
Sorry.
But yeah, no.
Ignorant questions.
Plex was one of the first apps out for the Apple TV. Yeah. And it works. It works really well. Nice. So, yep. Moving on to listener Jason, he has 3 cool stuff founds for us. Let's see. One, the first is called MacUp, MACKUP. It backs up all your application settings in a safe directory, Dropbox, iCloud, Google Drive. It syncs your application settings amongst all your workstations. It restores your configuration on any fresh install in one command. And then by only tracking pure config files, it keeps the junk out of your freshly new installed workstation. No caches, no temporary and locally specific files are transferred. It uses symbolic links to get this done. So very cool. I'm trying to find a link for it now that we can put in the show notes, and we'll have to dig a little bit deeper, but it'll be there because that's what we do. The second thing that Jason mentioned is called Carabiner, which is a powerful and stable keyboard customizer for OS X. It goes beyond keyboard customizations as well. Jason says, I use it for customizing the buttons on my Logitech mouse, way more powerful than the Logitech software. With custom XML, you can map buttons to keys and key combinations, as well as key combinations to new key combinations. Combinations can be made device and or software specific. For example, in Pixelmator, keys become key macros for me. It says, I use an old P keyboard, still enjoy my mechanical keys for my Mac desktop, and I use this to map Windows keys to Mac keys. You're only limited to your ideas as far as I can tell. It also has extension support, including Force Touch and multi-touch surface, though I don't have the hardware to test this on personally. You know, I have been using Apple's new Magic Trackpad. I picked up one of those when I was at the Apple store, and it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, of course it's bizarre, and people with MacBooks, new MacBooks know this, you know, it's bizarre clicking on something and having it feel like it's clicked, and it's only just haptic feedback that gives you that sensation. It's very bizarre because when the computer's off, you don't get the feeling of clicking. but it's very interesting. And I've been using Better Touch Tool for this, but I'm going to check out Carabiner too. So, but the new Magic Trackpad is interesting. John, you don't have one, right? You're a trackball guy. Is that right?
Currently, yes.
Okay.
on the desktop. Yeah. And the keyboard, you know, I'm actually considering getting a different keyboard. I'll talk more about it. I'm researching different keyboards here for a variety of reasons.
Okay, cool. And then one last thing from Jason in this big email is called Homebrew Cask. He says, Homebrew Cask extends Homebrew and brings its elegance, simplicity, and speed to OS X applications and large binaries alike. He says, I heard you guys talking about Homebrew, which I love. And he says, I wanted to add Cask to the list of advantages. He says, this works especially great after a nuke and pave. So what Cask does, and then I'll continue with Jason's explanation here, but what Cask does is it allows you to install lots of things with Homebrew, including applications for your Mac like Text Expander or Dropbox or really anything that can be pulled down from a software vendor. Normally, Homebrew is limited to command line stuff, but with Cask, you can install all kinds of extra things. And where this gets really handy is, and now I'll continue with Jason's explanation. He says, just create a quick shell script to run all of the brew cask install app commands. Then you install OS X. Then you run the script and you walk away. You come back, Dropbox is installed, combined with MacUp, combined with Text Expander, combined with all this stuff. So it's a great way to get all of these apps onto your Mac without having to go and manually download and then drag to the applications folder each and every one of them. So again, you know, if you combine MacUp, which Jason mentioned, with Homebrew Cask, it can make installing and doing a clean install on either your existing Mac or on a new Mac very, very simple, and yet you get to keep your settings but not all the cruft. There's some magic here. So thank you for this, Jason. Very, very interesting stuff. And we'll put links to all of that out there, of course. Anything to add? There's one last cool stuff found I'm gonna throw in from listener Mike. But Pete, the one from Mike is actually going to lead to a different topic. So you said you brought some cool stuff out.
I do.
And since you haven't been here, you count.
There you go.
Today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
So actually, one of my favorite, some time back, I told you about a couple different speed reading ones. But I found another one that has all the features that I want, and it's called OutRead.
Okay.
Excuse me. OutRead is an iOS version, but here's the one big thing that the other ones never had that this one has. You can get a clipboard text into OutRead and speed read off the clipboard, so that's nice. But it'll import EPUBs. You can get it from a URL, plain text. It has an ability to browse classic books. But the nice thing about the URL is you can throw, especially if you have your own domain, but there's other ways to do it.
Sure.
It'll read any EPUB. So you can get a novel or any open source book that you can get it into OutRead, and you can go anywhere from 50 to 1,000 words per minute.
Wow.
And it has a Safari plugin on iOS. So you can take an article that you're reading in iOS and say, this is too hard to read this way, put it into OutRead for me, and read it that way. So it's really cool. And my 9-year-old loves it. He's read 2 novels now in less than a month with OutRead. He loves it on his iPad. And I love it because it gets me through the excessive reading that I'm having to do extra at work these days.
So it'll read EPUB or PDF as well? EPUB?
I think it'll do EPUB. I haven't tried PDF.
So the
PDF
stuff you get from work is actually EPUB?
Usually, and then then I do a cut and paste. No, I'm sorry, PDF. But then I do a cut and paste or a clipboard needed. You know, I'll just convert it to what I need. But the big thing is the clipboard. I've been wanting that clipboard functionality for a long time, to be able to highlight, select, copy, and then throw it into OutRead. And it is slick, and it has day and night function. It's a slick program. It's well put together. The user experience is nice. You can go day mode, night mode,
yeah,
and speed it up, slow it down. Oh, and the other thing that some of the other ones didn't have that this one has is really nice is when you stop reading, it brings you up to where you were in the paragraph, and you can scroll back up a little bit and go, okay, that's what I missed, and get the larger context and go on. So, because sometimes URLs will get wonky, or other technical reading things will get wonky in there, and you can stop it and it goes into the paragraph mode and you can read it.
Cool.
And then put it back down. So yeah, it's got a lot of features that help you read. It'll either flash the words in front of your eyes, or it can leave it in that paragraph mode and track the highlight down so you can read it as you would normally read it, left to right and working down the page. But
cool, man.
Man, it is slick. I really love that. Have a lot of reading to get through, this helps a lot.
Cool.
So yeah.
Cool. All right.
And I'll get a price for you here in a second.
Okay.
I forgot whether it was money on that or not. I think it was $1.99.
But it happens.
Check. Yeah.
Money happens. That's right. All right. Well, moving on to our last cool stuff found. John, do you have anything to add or say about these cool stuffs found that we've talked about so far?
Not yet.
Okay. So moving on to Mike. Mike writes, he says, look, I know most people know about it, but the Genius Store is pretty cool. Or the Genius Bar. I called it the Genius Store. He didn't. He called it the Genius Bar. He says, I live in northern New Hampshire, a good 2 hours from the nearest store. After weeks of troubleshooting my 2011 MacBook Pro, I decided to try to give the Apple Store a shot when I was on a business trip down near Manchester. I arrived there and was told to come back tomorrow because of all the slots for the day were full. I explained my travel time and the problems with the computer. And when I was about halfway through the steps I had taken, the appointment master just asked me, it sounds like you're pretty sure it's a hardware problem. Let me see what we can do. They let me cut in line. I showed the genius what was going on, and he told me it was my lucky day. There was a recall on the graphics card in that machine. I left him the computer, and within 5 days, they shipped me back my computer, having replaced not only the logic board, but also the optical drive, the keyboard, the lower case, and the RAM, all at no charge. I am still amazed. And it's true. You know, the Apple Store doesn't always have the answer or the solution for everything, but they will do diagnostics for free, and they really do go out of their way to take care of you. I don't know this facet of the Genius Bar, but it certainly doesn't seem to me that the Genius Bar at Apple stores is held to a profit motive. Individually as part of the store, I don't think that section of the store they certainly don't act like they are held to a profit motive. They may very well be, but they really take care of you as the customer. They go out of their way. And my experiences there have been fantastic. In fact, I promised you all that I would finish and tell you the story of my son's broken iPhone screen. It was ironic that his screen broke during right around the time where we were talking about whether or not to get Apple Care for these devices. And I told you, and I still hold to this, that that for us here, based on our frequency of issues, it's not worth it to us to buy, you know, Apple Care for four phones at a time. But I knew that at some point I was going to have to replace a phone. And then sure enough, my son comes home with a shattered screen. It's like, oh, well, I get to put my money where my mouth is. Thanks, kiddo. So I mentioned this to all of you, but we went to the store and the thing is, the phone functioned. It just had a broken screen, but everything about it worked. No problem. This was an iPhone 6. So we took it into the store. They evaluated it and said, hey, yep. Okay. Seems like, we need to swap out the screen. It'll be $109. And I'm like, great. Now, you know, Apple Care on that phone would have cost me, I believe, $99. And then there would have been an incident fee of $79. So we're at $178 at that point. So I'm way ahead of the game, right? I'm $69 ahead of the game at $109. Awesome. So we leave it. They say it's going to take about an hour. So we go and get some wings, and we enjoyed a nice father son moment at whatever the wing place was. And then we went back to the Apple Store about an hour later, and we get there and the genius comes out and says, so here's the thing. We tried two different screens and neither of them would work. And then we tried your original screen and that wouldn't work. And they had warned us ahead of time that, you know, there was no guarantee that replacing the screen was the issue, was going to solve it, that, you know, the damage could have gone deeper. All the guy was looking at was, you know, the assembled phone that we had brought in and couldn't promise anything. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. And so evidently, and I, you know, the nice part about having friends in good places is I was immediately able to text Shannon Jean, who is one of the co-founders of Mac Rescue, and he now runs Tech Restore. So he sees this stuff all the time, or, you know, his business does. And he confirmed for me that, yeah, sometimes when the screen is shattered, the if the impact is strong enough, the connector on the logic board of the phone can also get damaged to the point where you can't get anything to connect to it. He said sometimes you try a few different screens and you'll find one that'll work, but those connectors are very, very sensitive and very fragile on the logic board. And they had tried two and then, of course, tried the original one and that didn't work. And so the proposal from the Apple Store was, look, you can take your chances. If you want to go to a third party shop, they might be able to fix it. You know, we have our policies here. We try two new ones and then that's that. But the guy seemed pretty sincere about it, you know, and he said, or, you know, we can do flat rate repair, which replaces the phone. Now, I had totally forgotten that flat rate repair existed on iPhones. I assumed we'd have to just buy a new phone at market rates, which for that phone, I think is, I don't know, $600 or $700, whatever. And they're like, so it's $299 for the flat rate repair. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm all over that. Yeah. You know, it didn't.
I'll take two.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, you know, I looked at Lucas. I'm like, so that's more than we expected to spend, but then nowhere else on the planet can we get a brand new iPhone 6, 128 gigs for $299. That's it. Now, the important thing to remember is it's $299 no matter what size device you have. Uh-huh. So if it was a 16 gig phone, it's still $299. So this is again where, you know, you start to make some money back buying larger capacity devices. But yeah, so we did it, and, you know, and then they were like, great. And the guy even had the phone right there. I mean, he had the box out. He knew we were going to take. I'm like, oh, so do you have to go get one? He's like, no, it's right here. That's what's in this box. I'm like, oh, sweet. Perfect. And so, you know, we did the thing and we restored from iCloud and all was well. So that's the end of my story. That's it. That's all I got to say. But it was a good experience at the Apple Store. Any thoughts on that,
John? Yes. Well, I'll add a little bit to that. So one, you may recall, Dave, when I had my, as it turns out, defective 6S, that was actually the classification that they put on the work order. I was surprised to see that. And I think I forwarded that to you.
Yeah.
You took a peek at it. But they said the item number for this repair is iPhone 6 flat rate repair, $299. And of course, they waived it.
They waived it. Yep, you're totally right. Yeah, I had just forgotten that was even an option. Yeah.
But the other thing that I saw to back up your story, so I actually met someone that I used to work with in another life at the Apple Store. He was like, hey, are you John Braun with Mac Geek Gab? And I'm like, who wants to know? No, it was a guy I used to work with, but he brought in his, you know, way out of warranty, but he had a similar to my machine, but older. So he had a 2009 15-inch MacBook Pro, and he had a problem with the trackpad not working. And you may be able to guess, but let me, and he had a problem with the trackpad not quite working. So he brought it to the bar there, and I actually saw the genius come out and show him the reason that it wasn't working. And to back up your thing about the profit motive, the guy was like, okay, yeah, here's your computer and here's your battery and here's the bulge in your battery.
Yeah.
And that actually takes, as far as I know, the same battery that this machine takes. You know, it's user serviceable or replaceable. But he was like, you know, we don't have any. It would take us a while to get it, but there's a authorized service provider near you, and you're probably better off going to them and getting a new battery put in the machine.
Yep.
So yeah, the guy was, his goal was to help my friend. You know, get his machine working again. But yeah, because the battery was bulging, and a tip to people here is if your trackpad or button is not working on your MacBook, it could be because the battery is in trouble and it's pushing against it and causing it not to work. So yeah, it was nice to see. I saw it happen right in front of me. It was great.
No, it's true. And the thing to always remember is the Apple Store, the Genius Bar, or the Genius Stores, I evidently like to call it, does free diagnosis up until you have to replace hardware to continue diagnosing something. But they will do that. And then, as you just pointed out, John, are happy to send you on your way, right? So your buddy didn't pay them to sort out what the problem was. They told him what the problem was, and they told him where to go to get it with no cash exchanged. It's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, yeah, it's customer service.
Yeah, customer service.
You know, I think you're onto something, Dave. Maybe they should have a Genius store where you could, you know, pick up a Genius or two.
Yeah, well, thankfully they don't. And that's why people still come and listen to our show. So it's a good thing.
That's good.
Hey, you know, there is one thing, though, and I know we have some folks that might be able to share this information with us. I'm curious what the limits are for a flat rate repair. I mean, at what point when I walk in with a broken phone, at what point do they say, whatever you did to this thing is outside of flat rate repair? I would love to know that because I'd love to share it with all of you. You know, if I flush it in the toilet, does that disqualify it for flat rate repair? If I grind it in the blender and bring in a baggie of nothing but dust, you know, I'm sure the latter, right? That is, listen, dude, no, you know, but it's, you know, there's some line between there, and I would love to know. So.
I got to say, though, years ago, this is going back many years, though, and I think it may be on that white machine I brought in over that old MacBook. Mm-hmm. And I had it repaired, and I got it home, and the repairers had cracked the screen. And I took it to the Apple store, and they're like, yeah, not so much. And then I called the number and did flat rate repair, and they were like, oh, yeah, and by the way, you know, the screen will be, you know, another $400 on top of that. I'm like, well, just send it in and do that. And they came back and they did it for, at that time, the flat rate repair was $199.
Yeah. And, well, it's different for each machine. Yeah. That's right.
And then they did it anyway, and they didn't charge me the $400 extra. So yeah. That was a long time ago, though, so I'm really reaching back.
But, yeah. And things change. I mean, but yeah, I'd just be curious to know where with the phone, where that line gets drawn. Yeah. I mean, obviously if you show up without the phone, they're not going to do a flat rate repair.
Sure.
Sure. You know, you have, okay. It has to be recognizable.
It's at the bottom of the river, but I swear to you, phone.
Yeah, it's not working. There's no question. You know,
the one thing that hasn't changed though, over the years, and surprisingly, I expected it to go away at some point, and it still may, but the customer service experience at the Apple stores and over the telephone is excellent. That's the one thing I think that they are shooting for more than anything else, because a happy customer spends more money.
So, yeah, well, true. Awesome, totally. You know? And I do want to give a shout out to Joe at the Apple store, who is a listener to the show and came over and said hello to Lucas and I while we were waiting for our assigned Genius to come and help troubleshoot the problem. Thank you, Joe. It was a pleasure speaking with you, man. All right, let's move on to a few questions. I said we would talk a little bit about the Apple TV. We have some questions about that. My goal is to move through these quickly. You know, I'm not sure what my goal actually, if my goal is realistic, but we'll get started with it. So Mike writes, he says, I've been listening to your shows. My question is, I have a third generation Apple TV with a digital audio out. I run that to the soundbar on my TV setup. Is there a digital audio out on the new Apple TVs, the fourth gen? So the answer is no. The new Apple TV does not have a discrete digital audio out. It only supports HDMI output. Now, here's the good news, but there's a caveat. HDMI contains all of your audio out, of course. And many TVs will process HDMI to a digital output. The Toslink, the optical output, is what used to be on the third gen Apple TVs. A lot of TVs will take whatever's coming in with HDMI. And of course, most TVs now, in fact, have multiple HDMI inputs, and will, whichever one you have chosen for your video, they will then send to this optical output. And that's not universal, but it's fairly common. So that's doable. One important thing to note, though, is that while HDMI audio can and almost always does pass along full, you know, 5.1, 6.1, or even I think 7.1 sound, many TVs, when they process it to the optical output, only pass through two-channel stereo. They mix it down to two-channel stereo, sometimes 2.1 channel with a low-frequency, you know, subwoofer output. Some TVs will pass it through unadulterated, but most mix it down. I think I always assumed that the reason for the mix down was a copy protection thing, so that you weren't just spitting out raw audio, because HDMI has all this copy protection on it. Toslink, the optical output, does not. That was always my assumption. That may be true, but it may in fact not. CNET has a list of TVs that will output all of these, and so we'll put that in the show notes. But and we'll leave it there. However, if you need to do this, and especially with the new Apple TV, especially if your TV doesn't have an optical output, there is a little box you can get from one of my favorite companies, Monoprice. And this little box has, it's a four-way HDMI selector. I originally got it because our first plasma TV only had one HDMI input, and I needed to choose, multiple devices eventually. This one has four HDMI inputs, one HDMI output, and then it has three audio outputs, one stereo, which is, just left, right stereo, typical. It's a mini eighth jack. It's actually a headphone jack kind of thing, which, of course, you could split out to do whatever you want with. It's got coax, which is digital, and Toslink, the optical, which is digital. And the coax and the Toslink both put unadulterated signals out. So, and this box is $43. It's fantastic. It works extremely well, super reliable. It's remote controllable. The only complaint about it, and I've mentioned this years ago when we first talked about it, and it still holds true with the current ones that Monoprice sells today, is the light on the front of this thing will sear your retinas from 30 feet away. You definitely need to take some black electrical tape and put it over the front of this thing so that the lights do not kill you. I mean, it's insane that they would build a box that's supposed to sit underneath your TV, a direction into which you're supposed to look for hours on end, and have these things that are totally distracting. So just get some black electrical tape and it solves that problem. Don't worry, you can still see the lights through the tape.
Four layers.
Yeah. We wound up putting several layers of tape on ours, but I'll put a link to this thing in the show notes because it's a handy little box and it is the way to get around this, this thing. And especially of course with the Apple TV. So that's question number one about the Apple TV. Anything on that, John, before I move on? Like I said, I'm trying to get through these quick. I'm not succeeding.
I wonder if you'd maybe want to do a little surgery on that unit there, like clip that LED.
Well, it's nice to know. I mean, there are, for troubleshooting, it's nice to have the lights on and the black tape.
Or maybe
blends
replace
perfectly.
It with a less intense LED.
That would be the trick. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, break out the soldering iron.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
I had one device. Yeah, I think it was an old iOmega external drive that had, like a blinding white LED. And yeah, I had to turn it away. It was too much. It was like, you got to figure sometimes, like, did anyone actually use this, before they released the product? I mean, dude, that's bright.
Every single review that I'm looking at on Monoprice right now talks about the bulbs. In fact, the second one says, pros, great way to update an older amp with only one optical input, works great. The cons, LEDs are too bright. Electrical tape took care of that. It's not me, I swear. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. Moving on to, from Mike to Michael, we talk about Plex, John. Michael says, I've been a satisfied user of Synology's DS Video and Video Station for watching all my video content via their Roku app and iOS app. There is not an Apple TV app yet, and while they haven't promised me that one is in development, I will point out that they have an iOS and Roku apps, so, and an Apple Watch app. So I can only assume that Apple TV app is coming for Synology's Video Station, but it doesn't exist right now. Moving back to Michael. However, with Plex now available on the new Apple TV, as well as because Plex has an even better interface, I've started switching my content over to the Plex media server on my Synology. He's got a DS1513 Plus. I've never had any buffering problems with DS video, but with Plex, I'm having some substantial buffering issue with some of the content. Not all, and I can't figure out why. It happens whether I'm on Apple TV or Roku, which points to it being the server. Lowering the quality of the stream of both apps makes no difference. The quality stuttered, but buffering was just as bad. I saw mentioned on the Plex support site that if you are streaming on a local network, as I am, then actually increasing the stream quality on each app may help, as this has the potential to allow the server to skip transcoding or only remux content if it's otherwise compatible. So I maximized the stream quality setting on both the Apple TV and the Roku Plex apps, and sure enough, the buffering problems disappeared. At the very least, I thought this would make a good tip for anyone who has the same problem, but I'm also curious if this solution makes sense to you. All of my video files are MPEG-4 and typically good HD quality. I'm assuming that no transcoding is necessary with MPEG-4, so was Plex trying to transcode it down to a lower quality, resulting in the buffering? And by raising the stream quality, it therefore allowed Plex to skip the transcoding. If that's the case, I'm surprised that Plex doesn't make this more automatic, or at least easier to take care of if you are on a fast local network. You're totally right. There's really no answer to this question other than to say yes. Plex has the ability to transcode down so that if you're watching, say, over the internet, or if you want to sync a copy to your iPhone or iPad and you don't need the full, you know, 1080p version on those devices, you can tell it to shrink it down, and it will shrink it down, but it takes CPU power to do that. Your DS1513 Plus has a dual core CPU. I know, because I had one, and it's an Intel CPU, and it's not underpowered by any stretch, but you know, you're asking it to do a lot, and I believe it can only use one of those cores to do that anyway. I don't think Plex has the ability to use multi-core, but I might be wrong on that. So yeah, you just want to let it run full bore. DS Video will run full bore automatically. So that's why you weren't having any problems with that. So yeah, that's exactly it. Set your Plex thing to unlimited and I'm not sitting in front of my TV because I'm doing a podcast, but if you launch the Plex app on your Apple TV and go into settings, you can set it, and there is an unlimited setting, and that's actually the one you want to choose, unless you have some bandwidth issues between whatever your Plex server is, and it could be a Synology, it could be your Mac. If there's bandwidth issues, then you got to set it. But what's cool about Plex is they let you set two bandwidth settings, one for local servers and one for servers over the internet. So you can tell it, yeah, if it's coming over the internet, max out at, you know, whatever, 3 megabits per second or what, you know, whatever you want. Local, let it go unlimited, and you'll be in good shape. So great question, Michael. Thank you for asking. Am I okay to move to Dan here, John?
What sort of transcoding is occurring?
Well, if you've got, good question.
Is it because the format of what I'm gathering is that if the format of the video is not an MP4, then some horsepower is required to convert it to that so you can stream it.
That's one case. Yeah. So, okay. Right. So, no, it's a great question, right? Because it could be that if you've got the video in, say, AVI format or Matroska, which is MKV format, and it's not containing an MP4, then yes, it's got to transcode it to something that the Apple TV has the capability to play natively. And that's going to be true until VLC comes out for the Apple TV, in which case it might be doing some transcoding on the Apple TV itself, but I got on the beta list for that, so I've been playing with it. That'd be cool. Yeah, but for Plex and for most things, there's this, you know, Plex takes a video and I think just tells the Apple TV to display it using its normal, frameworks. I don't think they're doing anything custom there. They're just saying, hey, here's a video and display it. So you're right, John. If the video is coming or exists in a format that the Apple TV cannot play natively, then it needs to be transcoded. Or if you tell it, I only want, you know, the max I want on my TV is 720p video, and that video happens to exist in 1080p format. Well, now it needs to even if it's in an Apple TV compatible format, you've told it to transcode down to 720p or to max out at 720p. So it has to transcode, and it will attempt to do that on the fly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess the whole thing is to understand. So one is you got to understand the native capabilities of whatever device you're targeting. So the Apple TV can play certain videos without having to do any work.
That's right.
Or the media server will decide.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Because I've never had this issue, I guess, because I handbrake my stuff and they come out as M4Vs.
Okay.
And then I use video stations. So I'm gathering that there's any transcoding occurring.
That's correct. Well,
handbrake has done it already.
You got it.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's worth using a handbrake preset that is, you know, for an Apple device. And in fact, they even have one for the Apple TV so that you're sure to be creating files that will play natively without, you know, any fuss. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Depends how much of a hurry you're in before you leave, whether you convert it with handbrake or just let the server do it.
And it depends on how much power you have in your server, right? We're talking about issues on a Synology, which, you know, this for a Synology and for a NAS unit is relatively fast.
Sure.
But compared to your Mac, it's a total dog.
Yeah. So I've got that Mac Mini totally dedicated to that, and I love it.
Yeah. You won't even notice when it's doing transcoding. Wow. You could care less.
It's beautiful.
Right. And that, yeah. And, you know, I've got the Synology I run now is an 1815 plus. And so it's got a little more horsepower and I've got mine set to run full bore. But, you know, I'm a geek. When I launch an app, the first thing I do is not play a video. I go into the settings and I, you know, but that's why we do this show. So now, you know, and you do have to go into the settings and make sure it's set the right way. Fun stuff. All right, moving to Dan. Let's see how quickly I can do this here. Dan writes, he says, I bought my wife a bunch of TV series. And he says, I bought them on DVDs, but I want to put them on the Apple TV. And so I'll use Handbrake to rip them, which is just what you were talking about, John. Okay. He says, now for the tough part. She wants to be able to play them on the Apple TV while at home and sync to her with iTunes to her iPad and iPhone for playing on the airplane. My ideal solution would be something like a Drobo or a Synology, a lower end model. So let's take transcoding off the list, and that's fine. With something like, you know, a couple of 3 terabyte drives and some sort of redundancy. I'd like to load up the solution and just set it up and we're good to go. So what do I do? And I think in this scenario, the easiest thing would be to use Synology Video Station. And the reason I'm choosing Synology's Video Station is because it works on their low-end devices. Plex does not always work on the low-end devices. You've got to go and check and make sure that there's Plex support for each of these devices. It, you know, they all run different CPUs. And the Plex, it's up to the Plex folks, because they are the app developer, to compile a version of their app, the media server app, for these devices. And some of them do it and some of them don't. So, you might be able to, if you find one that it works on, great. We might talk about that shortly here. But that, using Synology's Video Station, lets you sync offline. It lets you stream to the Apple TV. It does not have an app for the Apple TV yet, but that's good news and bad news for Apple TV 4 owners. It means you can't navigate directly on the TV to pick your videos, but it works with the Apple TV 3rd gen and 4th gen, because you just navigate on your iPhone and then you tell the Synology to stream directly to the Apple TV. You don't AirPlay from your phone. It actually AirPlays directly from the NAS unit, which is, it's magic. I don't know how they do it. I think they've actually broken some rules to do it, but they don't care because they serve their customers and I like it. So yeah, that's the answer on that one. And I think the one thing I skipped was which NAS to use, because Doug asks that question and we will go there. So looking at low-end Synologies, Synology has a page and they that we will put in the show notes. It's actually a Google spreadsheet, Google Doc spreadsheet, I don't know, whatever you call it, that lists whether these things can do video transcoding and whether Plex puts this spreadsheet out, not Synology, and all these NASs. And it's not just Synology. It's, you know, they've got Netgear and everybody else on here too. QNAP. So, and Drobo as well. So you can check all this out there. If you want a single bay NAS, there are two that will work, and it's worth checking it out. you know, there's the one, I think it's the 112. That's it. The DS-112 and the DS-115 should both do this. So we'll put a link to that spreadsheet out there, and that way you folks can check out exactly what you want to do, and you should be good to go. So, I'd go with the DS-115J if you have to pick one. So that's my advice, and you can get the experience of a NAS. The nice part about the Synology stuff is if you decide you want more horsepower or more drive bays, you can take the drive or drives out of your old Synology and move it up to the next one, and you save all your settings and all your data and everything, as long as the new one has as many or more drive bays, i.e. it can fit the drives that you have, you're good to go. Go ahead, John.
Now, the one thing I want to mention for Dan as I started thinking about it, so I do have a solution. It will not solve your Apple TV, but if you do want to play movies on iOS and a computer, then something that I've mentioned in the past may be something to consider, and that's there are several of these devices here. So one is the SanDisk iXpand flash drive. Another that I've used that will also let you go between platforms. Leaf makes a thing called the Leaf iBridge mobile memory, and then the one that I just got here, I think could be another solution, would be the SanDisk Connect wireless stick. They all let you share your various content between iOS and a computer. So it wouldn't solve the Apple TV streaming thing, but
right.
Just thought I'd mention it.
No, it's
because I have used it for movies. Once you transcode them, or once you rip them, or put the content there, if you want to go between Mac, PC, and iOS, those again are something to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And Handbrake is the way to rip these movies. I go crazy. I actually use Handbrake. I use Don Melton, former Apple Safari engineer. He wrote a bunch of command line scripts that create Handbrake movies that tweak Handbrake to make movies that are very similar in quality to those that Apple releases on the iTunes store. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. You got to be a nut to want to do this, but it's totally worth being a nut to do this, because you can take your fully ripped, Blu-rays that you rip with it, make MKV into Matroska format, and turn them into much smaller and yet still super high quality videos. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But first, John, I want to talk about our three sponsors. That work for you?
Absolutely.
All right. The first sponsor I want to tell you about this week is Drobo. Longtime Mac Geek Gab listeners will know that Drobo is one of our favorite vendors, and it's because they focus on keeping your digital data safe. This digital data is essential to our lives. We need to store it in reliable places, and we need that data to stick around. Hard drive failure is something that takes data with it more frequently than anything else, and Drobo protects against that. They make safe, simple to use arrays that protect against hard drive failure. They also make it really simple to expand those arrays. So Drobo sells you this box, and it's actually a really nice looking box, and you can put drives in it, and then you can add a drive to add more space to it. If a drive dies, you take the drive out that's dead, you replace it with a good one, and you still haven't lost any data. In fact, you're still accessing your data when the drive has died. This is what Drobo makes simple. What they also make is an awesome coupon code. The coupon code GEEK100, that's GEEK 100, will save you $100 at drobostore.com. Make sure to visit drobostore.com. You can find the 4-bay Drobo that connects to your Mac with USB 3, normally $299. Now it's $199 with that coupon. This applies to the Drobo 5D, which direct connects with Thunderbolt and has 5 bays. Also applies to the Drobo Mini. You got to check it out. DroboStore.com, coupon code GEEK100, GEEK100, saves you $100 off of these great units from Drobo. Check them out. Our thanks to Drobo for sponsoring this episode. There are many reasons I love our next sponsor, Casper. One of them is that they let me get a good night's sleep. The other is it doesn't break the bank to do it. Casper makes fantastic foam mattresses. These are not just memory foam. They are memory foam at the core. And then they're surrounded by latex foam. And that way, not only do you get the cozy, comfortable, snuggly fit of a foam mattress, the latex foam keeps it from being too warm. So you get this nice, cool, refreshing kind of thing. It's not cold. It's just not hot and sweaty. And that is why Casper mattresses are perfect. You got to check this out. Here's the thing, though. Their prices are awesome. They've cut out the whole concept of going to a store and laying on a bed in your clothes to test out the mattress. They let you test it out where you should test it out, at home. They ship you the mattress. You try it out at home. You've got 100 nights to try this thing out for free. If you decide you don't like it, they take the mattress away. You don't pay shipping or anything, and they give you all your money back. But here's the thing. It's not that much money to begin with, right? A twin size mattress is $500. A king size, the most expensive, is $950. But it gets better, because with coupon code MGG, you save $50. So that means a twin size starts at $450. A king is $900. And that's that. There's no shipping. All of that stuff is taken care of. Just remember to use coupon code MGG. You can see all the details at casper.com/MGG. Start getting a good night's sleep now. You're going to love it. I promise you. Check it out. casper.com/MGG. Coupon code MGG saves you $50. Our thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode. If you need a website, Squarespace is the place to start. Go to squarespace.com/MGG and start building your site today. Here's the thing. Your skill level is irrelevant. All you got to do is know what you like to see. Sites that are designed with Squarespace all look professionally done, no coding required. You start with a template. Literally, that's what you start with. They don't ask you your name. They don't even ask you what site you're building. Go to squarespace.com/MGG. You start with a template. Pick your favorite. Then start adding in your own stuff. Maybe you have some text. Obviously, you're going to have a title for the page. Put all of that in. Pull in your own images. All of this is happening inside your web browser. You're designing the website inside your web browser. The tools are super intuitive, easy to use, and you can build something very, very quickly. I built an entire site in an hour once with Squarespace, and that included adding in the ability to take payments for tickets I was selling on this site. Really simple, really elegant. You've got to check it out. I actually use Squarespace for a couple of sites. Flingrocks.com is the band that one of the bands anyway, that I play in. And we host our website there. You can check it out. You can sign up for our mailing list. It makes it really easy. They link with MailChimp and all of that. So it just works. My DaveTheNerd.com blog, that's there. That's where I post all my stuff. Makes it really easy. They've got these great iOS apps, so I can post a blog post. In fact, I think the two or three most recent posts on my site have all been posted from my iPhone. It seems like I post things on my iPhone when I'm sitting next to my wife while she's driving in the car. So you can check those out there. Listener Jason Kimes at Jason Kimes, JasonKimes.com. He's a sculptor. His site's on Squarespace. Really cool stuff. You got to check this out. It's like this big, huge copper man that he's built and everything. It's amazing stuff that this guy's done. And it's amazing what you can do with Squarespace. Check it out. Squarespace.com/MGG is where you start. You get 14 days for free. And then when it's time to buy, use coupon code MGG to save yourself 10%. You got to check it out. Squarespace.com/MGG. Our thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode.
And now, Dave and Pete, we're going to go to Mark. Mark brought up an interesting question that touches on a lot of things that I think will be useful to our audience here. And it's something I've had to wrestle with also. So Mark writes in and says, over the years, I've accumulated lots of color profiles, .icc and .icm files from installations of different printers, scanners, monitors, and color software like Adobe Photoshop. I know I need some to make color sync work between all my devices, but I am trying to locate them all to delete the ones I will never use. The reason is, in Photoshop, when I pick a color paper profile to print with, I get a drop-down list that goes on and on and on and on. I figured out that many of these profiles are hidden inside show package contents of certain files, but it's a hit or miss to find those certain files. Does anyone make an app for managing color profiles on the Mac? Not Apple's Color Sync utility. It only shows some of the profiles on the computer, certainly does not show the not visible ones. So I took one for the team here, Dave, because this has annoyed me as well. So first, you may be asking yourself, what is Color Sync? Color Sync is Apple's technology that allows you... The thing is, the technology used for displaying things and printing things, without getting a whole color science course here, but the thing is, they use different technologies here. So one way that you can get what you see on your screen to come out on your printer and look the same is you create a profile. Now, you may want to calibrate your device, but sometimes the device will come with a profile. And so if you say, okay, I have this display and this color printer, then what you see on your screen, in theory, should be what you get on the printer or the paper. But as Mark found, sometimes you're going to build up some cruft here. And actually, this happened to me recently, Dave, when I got a new screen, is that I had the profile. At first, I got this new LCD, and I was like, wow, this looks terrible. What's wrong with it? And then I found out it was actually using the profile of the old screen that I had. And because they, had, just different characteristics, it looked terrible. Once I picked my current display, then everything was great. But that's because it left that cruft. It left it over. Photoshop gets a little different because I've never dealt with paper profiles. So I dove in, Dave, and I actually went and downloaded Photoshop Creative Cloud and installed it to see what was happening here. Because normally, at least on my system, I don't have any paper profiles. And one, oh my gosh, dude. Photoshop and Creative Cloud, I couldn't believe how much stuff it just spewed on my system and the network connections. I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah. Huh.
But it also puts thing, per Adobe, it also puts thing, and I think this was the challenge that Mark ran into, it also puts things in somewhat non-standard locations because they're Adobe, right?
But it's still locations that the OS sees, right?
Well, that's the trick here. So I found out how you could find them here. So so the one thing I want to mention here is that if you want to find display profiles, this you can do fairly easily. But it also gave me an opportunity. It gave me a hint to see where Adobe was placing some of this stuff here. So the thing is, if you go into System Preferences, Display, and then click on the Color tab, what you're going to see is Display Profile. Now, normally, or at least on El Capitan, it looks like they tightened things up a bit here, is that normally it's just going to show the display that you're connected to. But if you, there's a box, if you uncheck this box called, which is marked Show Profiles for the Display Only, you're going to see where, you're going to see a whole bunch of other profiles, which you may or may not want to use. Now, how can you tell where these are, you may ask? And I'm going to tell you, if you hover your cursor over any of these and you wait a moment, it's going to show you the path that profile is stored in.
There it is.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, a lot of them are in standard locations here. So one, I offered this advice here, is that if you look in the display profiles, that may give you a hint as to where other profiles are being stored, because they all are or should be stored in the same location. And here's what I found. So most of them, Dave, you will find they're going to be stored in either /library/colorslink/displays or /system/library/colorslink/displays.
The rule I always follow is if it's in /system/anything, and when we say slash, we just mean new folder. So at the top of it, the first slash means at the top of the drive. So we're not talking about your user library folder. We're talking about the library folder on the top of your hard drive. But my rule is if it's inside system, it came with the system and has not been added after the fact and shouldn't be messed with. That's my typical rule, but maybe you found different.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I went a little further here. So what I found is that once I installed Photoshop, I then searched, I was looking for this, selection here to print on paper, and I didn't see it initially. So I, did a bit of research, went online, looked at their help. And as it turns out, if you go into in Photoshop, if you say print color management, Photoshop manages color Then when you go to the printer profile pull down, you're going to get a list of all sorts of printers and paper. And as far as I know, that's what he's talking about. So then what I did is, then I started exploring a bit more here. And as it turns out, /library/colorslink/profiles now had some aliases pointing elsewhere. So Adobe is kind of doing this in a standard way, but not really. So what I found happened is that when I clicked on the aliases, they brought me to a totally different spot. They brought me to /library/application support/adobe/color/profiles.
Okay. So they're just side loading them that way or yeah, got it.
Right. And when I looked in that, so they did put an alias in the area that they should be in, pointing to application support, which, you know, is kind of wonky. I mean, at least in my opinion. But then I found if I went to that directory and started whacking some of the entries in that directory in the application support slash Adobe area, then that is where it stored those profiles that he did not want to see. The other thing is that actually I found, Dave, is that so while, you know, we're still looking here. So the thing is, it doesn't entirely solve the problem of how to manage these, because the thing is, as he pointed out, ColorSync utility, while ColorSync utility will show you the paths that and it did show me. So once I ran Photoshop and it added these things, actually ColorSync utility did show, in an other directory, or that they have an other category. So they'll show you if you run ColorSync utility and then go to profiles, it'll show you system profiles, computer profiles, displays. And then it has this category other, and that's where some people put their stuff here. So one that I see here is HP. They put their, they put some of their printer profiles in there, but then also I saw system library core services, this and that. And then,
yikes.
And a few others. So ColorSync utility should be able to show you where some of these wonky profiles are. The thing is, neither ColorSync utility nor the display, you know, system preferences display color, neither of them, as far as I can see. Well, actually, no, I'll take that back. Nope, I'm not going to take that back. The thing is that a lot of them, they'll just show you the profiles, but they won't let you delete them. You actually have to dig in. That's why I, you know, name the directories here. Maybe somebody makes a utility, and actually this could be like a mini geek challenge. I wasn't able to find anything that lets you manage your ColorSync utilities or these profiles well.
That's it. It's a geek challenge. Yeah, because this is handy stuff. It's stuff that's in the way. Is it gonna make your Mac run any slower? No. But it makes managing this stuff, especially if you're someone who's installed software that doesn't, where you don't need these ColorSync profiles all the time. You know, it would be nice to clean up those listings. And like you said, Apple, and I think it even started before El Capitan, that you could, you know, in the displays thing, you can check the box that says show only for this display. But even still, like, you know, your print dialogues and everything get cluttered up with this stuff if you're digging around. So yeah, it would be nice to have a way to manage it. Good find, man. This is awesome. I like it.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm gonna run Photoshop. I typically don't. I'm not a Photoshop type of guy. I use other utilities to do my photo manipulation.
I'm a big fan of both Pixelmator and Acorn. Man, I don't know who needs photo. I know there are people that need Photoshop, but man, Pixelmator is awesome. And you know, here's the thing: Pixelmator on iOS is super full featured. The other day, you know, I've had it for iOS, but I'll be honest, I haven't really used it much. And the other day I wanted to make a silly picture. I had this idea that I wanted to put a goose egg on the stage of our high school, because my daughter said, oh, we should do this play. And I thought in my head, wow, that would be terrible. It would be like laying a big goose egg right there on the stage. Nobody would like that. And so I wanted to just quickly with my iPhone, make this image. And I knew that I could, you know, search online and find a picture of a goose egg, and I could find a picture of of the stage from the high school. And I thought, oh, I can use Pixelmator because that's what I would use on my Mac to do this. And you can do layers and all of that stuff. But I had no experience with using it on the iPhone. Man, it couldn't have been any easier. I copied pictures from Safari, pasted them into Pixelmator as I pasted each picture into the app. Again, this is all on my iPhone. It created a new layer. I could reorganize the layers. The layer organization tool was there when I wanted it. It was gone when I didn't. It was really easy to just click and or tap and hold and move things around. I was able to resize these images. I could do the transparency the way I wanted. And it literally took me longer to talk about this than it did to do it. And I created the image and, you know, texted the final product off to my daughter and she laughed, you know, and it was, she's like, wow, you just did that. I'm like, yeah, man. And I'm like, Pixelmator. My son's like, I use that all the time. I'm like, yeah, see, family app sharing for the win. So, of course, on the Mac, you can do all of that and more. And to get back to my point, I'm not sure. I know there are people that need and use Photoshop, but it's not like it used to be. For, you know, $50 or less, you can now get a piece of software that'll do what most of us lay people would use Photoshop to do and do it extremely well. And I would even venture to say if you've never used Photoshop and you don't have a need to use it because you're sharing files with other people, you could probably get away with, you know, again, Pixelmator or Acorn. I tend to go to Pixelmator first just because it's the one I learned first. But Acorn on the Mac is the same way. So. Anyway, I throw those out.
Speaking of package managers, yeah. So I'll throw out two others. So actually, I've been
talking
using
about
this
package
for years,
managers.
David, for,
go ahead.
Oh, I think we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
Or someone was getting a tip here.
I know this frustrates me sometimes when we actually have offline conversations about it, but I actually love this about you that you'll just pull things that totally make sense and are relevant in your head but might not be exactly in sync with where we are in the show, but I love it. And I know our listeners love it. So please go.
Well, some do. Whereas I've seen at least one iTunes comment where somebody said, you know, I just want to slap the ADD out of John sometimes.
That's right. That's fine. It's part of the charm, my friend.
But this applies. So another tool that I like using, so I found Graphic Converter. I still use that. And for basic editing, Graphic Converter, Graphic Converter, I've been using for probably almost a decade. I mean, the one thing it does, as the name implies, is that it converts between nearly any format to any other format. I think it's the king of doing that. But I want to mention package managers because another good program for, it's probably not quite as full featured as Photoshop here, but if you have a package manager, you can install something called GIMP, which I believe stands for GNU Image Manipulation Program. And any major package manager, and I'm sure Homebrew, I know Fink does, will let you download and compile that. And I think you need X11 installed in order to use that. But it's a good open source thing for editing your images.
So cool.
I'm going to toss that out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure you're right that Brew has it. It might actually be one of those cask things that we were talking about earlier in the show. But yes, either way, I'm sure it does. But I'll put a link to the gimp.org page in the show notes just so anybody can check it out. Good stuff. All right. A couple of tips while we're here. One from Lauren. This was fascinating to me. Lauren writes, I had the same problem that Bruce described on your latest show, which is where Time Machine was dreadfully slow. I assume my problem was related to an El Capitan update. I'm still on the public beta program, so I get a new update every few weeks or so. The Time Machine backup to my WD MyCloud was suddenly running for almost a week without ever completing, and the file count progressing dreadfully slow. What seems to have solved my problem was a safe boot to clear out caches, I was hoping. The safe mode boot also seemed to be taking an unusually long time, but after that, Time Machine began operating normally as expected again. I'm on a mid-2012 13-inch MacBook Pro. I'm seriously considering a full RAM upgrade and maybe even move to an SSD, but this did the trick for me for now. Great tip, Lauren. I guess it makes sense. Time Machine's going to use caches like anything else. I never would have thought of that to speed up Time Machine in this case, but I'm not going to argue with the results. So thanks for sharing that. Good stuff. And then moving on, Greg actually has a similar issue. And Greg, so I'm just going to describe it because the email trail got very, very convoluted. But Greg was having this issue where downloading from the App Store, the iOS App Store, was extremely slow, but speed tests would work, no problem. Everything else was fine. And he said, here's the thing, I'm having this same problem at my friend's house. I thought, oh, well, okay. You know, and so we went round and round, and finally Greg realized that they're both on Time Warner for their cable connection. He changed his DNS from the default Time Warner DNS that gets assigned by the cable modem to Open DNS, and suddenly everything was faster everywhere, including at his friend's house. So I don't know that I here's the thing. I emotionally support all conspiracy theories. So therefore, I love the idea of saying that Time Warner is somehow redirecting you to the wrong thing, iOS App Store intentionally. But I really can't come up with, I can't intellectually support this particular conspiracy theory because it doesn't actually make any sense. You know, why would they do this? There are, you know, Netflix, there are far bigger fish to fry when it comes to downloads. So I think I'm going to have to guess that this was an unintentional caching issue with their domain name servers at Time Warner that was pointing you perhaps to, you know, the Hong Kong mirror of iTunes Store, and it was just coming in really slowly, or wherever it was. You know, it's hard to say, but that would be my guess, is they were just pointing to the wrong one, or to a bad one, not necessarily the wrong one. But yes, using OpenDNS, in theory, using OpenDNS could cause the exact same problem, but using a different DNS is a great solution. So nice job, Greg. Excellent troubleshooting. It happens.
It's better to be lucky than good.
It is. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Or in Greg's case, unlucky and then lucky. Okay. So there you go. So yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. And one last tip from show 579. Bruce says, I have a quick thought on the listener who lost his volume controls that was mentioned in 579. I have a bit of a problem where my volume control was grayed out in the menu bar and the keyboard volume controls didn't work. The troubleshooting step you mentioned, looking in the system preferences for volume output device, did solve the issue. For me, this is for Bruce, the underlying problem was that I was using a monitor via the HDMI port and the monitor itself just had no sound output. OS X assumed that I'd want to send sound via HDMI because, of course, it supports it, as we discussed earlier, even though the HDMI device said I can't do audio, and it was annoying. So it switched automatically there, and then and he just had to switch it back to his internal speakers or whatever other speakers he wanted to use, and everything was fine. So did you have something to add?
Oh, no.
Oh, you were putting your hand in the air.
I was scratching my head. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
He's got peripheral. I bet John has something to say. John, is your hand up?
It sounds like it. Go ahead, John.
Well, my hand isn't up, but I'm going to put up a hand on behalf of the people in our chat room here.
MacGeekGab.com/stream. That's right.
Yeah, last I heard, and what they're suggesting, Dave, and this is a good tool, and actually I just ran it the other day. It's called DNS Bench. And it will identify it'll tell you the speediest DNS that's near you. But I found what it also does, David, it will alert you to shenanigans that your ISP or others may be pulling as far as DNS lookups. To your conspiracy theory, I think almost every ISP, if a DNS lookup fails or under certain conditions, they may do something not quite standard, like redirect you to a search page of their own making rather than saying something didn't work.
Okay, so this is not called DNS Bench. It's called Name Bench, but it does exactly what you just described. That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's we've got a link that we'll put in the show notes. So thanks. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things where, when you know the answer, it's simple, but in the thick of it, you know, I'm not sure. I didn't initially when I was reading Greg's question. I didn't think of DNS being the issue. It's obvious now. But yeah, man, you know, there's just so much to think about. That's why we get together every week here, John, is because we can share the brain, the brain trust. So,
well, you know, I'm looking here. There actually seems to be a tool called DNS Bench.
Yeah, that's the Gibson Research one that Steve Gibson does.
Okay.
That was the first Google one.
Oh, yeah, GRC, DNS.
So there's a couple.
All right, so it looks like there's a couple of tools.
Yeah.
I'll get the other link, too. Whoops.
Cool.
I just stuck something in the middle of the show notes.
I see that, Pete. Thanks for that. Yeah, no, that's good. I'll clean it up. Yeah, very good. Very good. No, but that is why we get together. And I'll use that as an opportunity to say thank you. We do have Thanksgiving coming up here in the U.S. On Thursday. So thank you to all of you who make it possible for us to do what we do here. John, thank you for continuing to do this with me for the last, 10 years. It's been a blast. Pete, thanks for coming today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Nice being head.
Yeah. It's good stuff. I feel like we've got room for one or two more, John. Let's see. Let's go to David. Actually, I before I forget, I want to throw in my own cool stuff found, because it's relevant. We're all going to be doing our holiday shopping this week, and there's Black Friday sales, and it's worth paying attention. And Mac Observer will be posting some, topically relevant stuff and deals that we find and all that. But I have found a website, and my family thinks I'm nuts for using it, but a website called AliExpress. Have you used this, John? Have you used this, Pete?
I haven't. No.
Ali Express. So there's all, you can still find a lot of this stuff on Amazon, but you get it cheaper from AliExpress. So there's all these Chinese companies that make all the things that we buy from, from our stores and our name brand vendors. But as has been explained to me, a lot of these Chinese quote unquote factories are just converted garages, for smaller stuff. Obviously Foxconn is not someone's converted garage, right? But for a lot of these things that we get, like our iPhone cases and Apple Watch bands and, especially the third party stuff, it's all just made in somebody's garage. And yes, they have a deal that they will only sell exclusively to the vendor that, pays them. And so, they might run the factory 8 hours a day for the vendor that pays them. And then they run it the remaining hours of the day and sell the stuff right out the back door in China. And that's just how it works. And it's sort of an accepted thing, for at least from the friends that I have that make products and use these factories. Well, AliExpress lets all those people just sell direct to you and me. It's free shipping to the U.S. It's a marketplace. It's not like, it's like Amazon's marketplace, right? So Amazon's or AliExpress isn't shipping this stuff to you. It's just putting you in touch with buyers, and they have reviews and they have an escrow thing. So your money is held until you receive the until you receive the product and release the money. And it's actually really well done. They've got an awesome iOS app. They always have good deals. And, the thing is, you can get, not everything there is a good deal. For example, I started looking at LED lights because I've been obsessed with replacing all the lights in my house with LEDs. And I actually found a better deal at BJ's yesterday. I bought 8 60 watt bulbs for $19 at BJ's, which is a pretty good price. But you can find that kind of stuff there. You can find, like, if you want a third party Apple Watch band, basically anything. It's not just electronics. It's anything. So I'll throw that out there. It's buyer beware, right? You're buying from these people that are certainly not native English speakers, but I bought a few things there, and it's all really inexpensive, and some of it is cheap and worth it, and some of it's inexpensive and nice. So I'll throw that out there. You might find some interesting stocking stuffer type things on AliExpress.
I can't believe you just did that, because I just did this days ago, Dave. Is I decided to ditch all my CFLs.
Yeah. Yeah,
I bought a whole bunch, and actually my local Home Depot actually just reduced the price. So I bought a whole bunch of 60 watt, like under $4 each.
Yeah.
They had some others. I didn't like the style. They had some others that were under $2 each, like $1.97, but I didn't like the style. They weren't like, the bulb style. They were
Yeah.
You know, kind of a weird form factor.
I saw those there. Style. Yeah, I was at Home Depot yesterday, too. But like I said, BJ's had the deal for me. $2.50 for Sylvania's. So that was a good one. But yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Here's an interesting anecdote. I know we've got listeners to this show from all age ranges. So I bought a bunch of these. I bought I bought 2 packs of them. So I bought 16 bulbs yesterday and I went around and was changing a bunch of them in the house. And I changed a bulb from a CFL to an LED in my daughter's room. And there were two problems with it. She said, well, now my two lamps look different because I only replaced one of them. And I thought, OK, I can deal with that. You know, I'll get you another bulb. That's fine. And she said, here's the other thing. You know, you flip the switch and that lamp just comes on like full brightness right away. And it hit me, even at almost 16 years old, her entire life, at least the parts of it she remembers, has never been with incandescent bulbs.
Oh, yeah. Instant on.
She doesn't understand the instant. She's like, this is weird. I flipped the switch and it's just like instantly bright. And it's wow. It's like it doesn't warm up anymore. She's like, it's like people light should warm up. I thought, wow, what a I mean,
because that's the thing I hate about CFLs more than anything.
I know. But she's never known anything different.
I want light now.
Yeah. It drives me crazy. I walk into a room. I feel like I'm blind for the first 5 minutes. Yeah. Wow.
Funny.
I know. Yeah.
It's what you're used to.
It's what you're used to. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I share because these are the things that are interesting to me. All right. So let's go to David, who asks a real question and gets us back on topic. David writes, I just purchased a new 5K 2015 27 inch iMac with a 512 gig SSD inside it. Very similar to mine. Yours is just a year newer. I have a Drobo 5N for NAS. Nice. I'm looking to get an external SSD for faster external direct connect storage for Parallels images to work and other files that I work on but don't put on my local drive. Okay. Yep. So you're asking the right guy or the right group of guys because we've tested all kinds of these things. As far as external SSDs, you're going to pay more for an external drive than you will for an internal. And perhaps John can find better deals on these things than me. Because you're really good at that. Maybe I should check AliExpress. But my favorites, and still the ones that I can find, at least from known name brand vendors at the lowest price, is the LaCie Rugged Drives. It's $500 for their 500 gig, $300 for their 250 gig. Again, it's not exactly inexpensive, but it's about the lowest price I've found. You can get them from OWC. We'll put links into the show notes there. That's about the, I would guess that's the size you're looking for there. If you need lots more storage than that, you can start to approach, again, in the same company and same product category, you can start to approach SSD speeds with LaCie's Rugged RAID 4 terabyte drive, which is actually two terabyte drives rated together. These are spindle drives, but because they're rated together, you start getting some serious speeds out of these things. Not quite you get like 250, megabytes a second, which is not quite the same as, the 350 or so that you get out of an SSD, but good. Now, latency is not like SSDs with these, nor would you expect it to be. So, but you get, you're talking about, monster storage. You can get a 4 terabyte drive for $400 and it's external and all of that good stuff. So those are my thoughts on this. John, are you finding anything better than that price wise for external SSDs these days?
haven't really been looking.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. So yeah, I like the LaCie Rugged drives. They're good stuff. I'm looking to see in the show notes in the chat room if anybody has found anything better, but I think
every now and then
go ahead.
I mean, I did sign up. I mean, every now and then I'm on their list, but they haven't sent me anything for a while. But Crucial would have refurbished SSDs for really good prices. I remember one time they were really affordable. Of course, you'd have to add your own case.
Right. Right.
Well, as you mentioned, OWC is my favorite place to get cases for all my drives that no longer live inside computers.
That's true. Yeah, you could put one together. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
There's no putting internals in the airs or anything anymore, though.
No, no, that's right. That's right.
No aftermarket for that.
No. Well,
is there?
No, I thought, yeah, I thought OWC, some of the...
Really? The shaped...
yeah, they've got the PCI Direct or whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah. I never even looked, so yep. Yeah, I just assumed that that was something they... Apple intentionally kind of tried to keep them out of the market for that. So
no, I think Apple did that because of size.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Here's how we do it. Yeah, here's how we solve that problem. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, it's certainly not as nice as... You know, that's why I got this class of machine here, the 2012 MacBook Pro, specifically because I screw the bottom off, pull right. out the standard size right. SSD and or old mechanical drive and just popped it in.
Or right.
But yeah, I know that. But there are certainly people that make kits that'll let you upgrade or replace your on the later Apple machines.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's right.
A bit more of a challenge, I would say.
Yes. Yeah. It takes a little more work. It's not built to be user serviceable for sure. So, all right, Everett has a question.
Hello, John. Hello, Dave. I had a quick question for you. In regards to your premium service, I know this is kind of a funny question. I was wondering how you screen your emails when they're sent to the premium service. How can you tell if a person is a premium subscriber or not? So, do you get an export of your XML? I mean, an export in an XML or a CSV file off of your premium database and then import them as a rule for mail? Or is there another way that you filter your email? Or can you even filter it all? Just a quick question. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thanks, Everett. Yeah, it's a very good question, and it's one that we spent a lot of time researching, and we use the honor system, Everett. you know, the premium offering here is something that is for those of you that want to be able to support us directly, and I know you all use different email addresses at different times of the day. You might have one for work. You might have, you know, your iCloud address, and you might have one that all your subscriptions go to, but you never actually email from. And I know that some of you use a custom email address for our subscription like you would anywhere to make sure that if your address gets harvested by someone, you know where it came from. And no, we never sell your addresses off. So that should never happen. But I get why you would do that. And I totally grok it. So we did a lot of research on it. There's actually some plugins for mail that we looked at that might have been able to pull some of that stuff in and validate it and all of that stuff. But in the end, we decided the honor system was the best way, given the point of the premium subscription anyway. There was no reason to put up additional walls there. So, yes, it's true. If you are not a premium subscriber and you email us to premium@macgeekgab.com, we will answer your question ahead of the queue, ahead of the regular queue, like we always do. And, you know, it's the honor system. So we're happy with it. And hopefully you guys are too. So that's.
Well, we do have a list, Dave.
We do have a list.
Well, we have the list for, you know, when you reach a certain threshold, of course.
Correct.
You know, you get something nice from us. So we do have a list. And all I'm going to say is, yeah, if you do send in something on premium and you're not a premium subscriber, you're probably going to get some coal in your stocking.
Yes, there's the naughty or nice list,
that's
too.
Just because that's naughty. That's definitely naughty.
That's right.
Yeah, we pretty much grok who are premium. I mean, when I see the, you know, I see the names and,
yeah,
and they usually resonate as, oh yeah, that's somebody I've seen on the list before.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, I think the conclusion is it's not worth the time and effort to have, you know, rigid.
Yeah. And it's
screening
not,
like
it's
that.
Not the spirit of it either. So yeah. Yep. It works. All right. One last question, because I just can't help us. No, you know what? We'll save that one for next week, because I don't want to rush through it. It's going to take us a little time to go through that one. So we will take this as the opportunity to say thank you again, especially for all of you that are premium subscribers. It's a pleasure to have you. It's a true pleasure.
And especially this time of year, Dave, you want to avoid rushing, especially around Thanksgiving, because it's going to be crazy out there. Everybody's going to be driving everywhere and Yeah, be careful.
Yeah.
I don't have to drive far, fortunately.
You spending time with family for Halloween? For Halloween. For Thanksgiving, John? You dressing up as a turkey?
Don't do it, man. It's dangerous.
My sister is hosting this
nice.
Year.
Nice.
So, yeah, she's close by, like a 20-30 minute drive.
Nice.
Depending on who's in my way.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
See, people keep getting in my way. Otherwise, I could go at warp speeds.
Do you have your tickets for the new Star Wars movie yet, John?
No.
Okay.
No.
We do.
Maybe I'll go to the theater, but, you know, it's not like an obsession for me. I can't remember the last time I went to the theater, Dave, was where I felt it was worth it was Avatar. Because last time I went to a theater to view a movie. Other than that, I got my, you've seen, I got a pretty decent home entertainment setup. I'll wait for it to come out on Blu-ray.
Oh, you'll miss all the surprises, man. You'll hear about them all online.
Yeah, there you go.
We have, not only do we have tickets, we have reserved seats Friday the 18th.
I actually went and saw The Martian this week, which is a good sci-fi, but solid science.
I've heard good things about The Martian.
Great. I recommend that in the theater if you can see it because of the Martian landscape and HD big screen. Beautiful. Really
okay.
Well done. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah.
Really? Right. Well, as an aviator, I would think you'd be looking for that, Pete.
Yeah. No, it's good.
Kind of like Airplane.
You know, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, Airplane was an accurate portrayal of flying a plane, right?
Absolutely.
I assume.
I think I've said it before. Nothing funnier than watching a room full of aviators watch that movie on a midnight hub turn in Memphis.
Oh, that's got to be
a blast. 200 pilots watching that movie. It's great.
That's awesome. What a great thing. That's great. For those of you that are premium members, premium@macgeekgab.com, as we mentioned, is the email address that you can use. If you're not a premium member, feedback@macgeekgab.com is the one for you.
Dave, I'm not as sure if I heard you right. I believe that you said feedback@macgeekgab.com, but I'd like to know what you heard, Pete.
I heard feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's right. It's all about the inflection, folks.
Right.
So it's 206-666 geek for anybody who wants to call us. And the number geek trans or the numbers for the letters geek. You know what I'm
That's
saying?
Easy for you to say.
What is it?
4335, I think.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
Perfect. Visit us at Facebook. MacGeekGab.com/Facebook is the easiest way to get there. That's the link you can always remember, and we will keep it up to date for you. Awesome Facebook group. Great group of people out there. And I really encourage you to join up and ask questions, answer questions, contribute cool stuff found. It's just a fantastic community, and we are privilege to be the stewards of it. So thank you. I also want to thank Cashfly at CACHEFLY.com for all the bandwidth it takes for us to get this show from us to you. Hopefully your ISP and your DNS servers pick the right Cashfly point of presence. They have like over 30 of them all over the globe. So it's pretty cool. It's actually really cool from a geeky standpoint. And then, of course, our sponsors. Gazelle at gazelle.com, iMazing at iMazing.com, coupon code MGG saves you 20%. Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek always has the latest deals for you folks. Squarespace.com/MGG, as we mentioned earlier. Lynda.com/MGG for 10 free days. Otherworld Computing, which of course we talked about. MaxSales.com. Barebones Software at barebones.com. Drobo at drobostore.com. That's where you're going to go. Geek 100. It's going to save you $100 right there. And Casper. Casper.com/MGG. Pete, it's a pleasure having had you here. Any lasting advice, just in case you don't make it back for a couple of shows?
I just want to tell everybody, while I'm gone, be careful and don't get caught.
Made up.